Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, it's John. Just a couple of bits of housekeeping before the show starts. Firstly, there won't be a podcast next week because I am going on holiday. I'm going to go and spend the week sat by a pool reading lots of books and trying not to think too much about trains. Secondly, since that will free up like half an hour in your schedule, right? So why not use that time productively to write us a nice review on iTunes? It really helps people discover that we're here. Particularly if you're one of our North American listeners, because we still don't have enough reviews on US iTunes for a rating to appear, and that's starting to really wind me up after 18 months. Thirdly, and finally, I don't remember who it was who, when I was tweeting about, we're coming up to an anniversary, what can we do to celebrate on the podcast? And someone out there, I'd love to know who this was, but someone out there suggested that what we should do is a drunk episode. So if you're listening, this is on you.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hey!
Hey!
I've literally no idea if that's going to be a remotely usable sound for the tape.
Fill us up, John.
Yeah, so hello. It's our slightly late 50th episode celebration, which we're doing in episode 51, for which there's a joke somewhere.
50 episodes, one for look.
We didn't even do, hello and welcome to... we totally forgot that. We were so excited to have, a bottle to open.
Hello and welcome to Skylines, the City Metric podcast. I'm Stephanie.
I'm John. Hello. Right, okay, we've done that.
It's 2 centimetres of fizz in my glass.
Okay, so, this was meant to be last week's episode, but we couldn't get the diaries to work, so we're doing it now. And here's the plan. We have a bottle of something that came from, I believe, the co-op, which is Carver. It has fizz in it. And we're going to drink, you're going to listen to us for the time it takes us to drink this bottle while we answer your ridiculous questions that you asked us on Twitter a couple of weeks ago. So thank you for coming back and doing this, Stephanie. Much appreciated.
It's lovely to be back.
And this is going to be a venture for all of us, particularly for the person who once requested a drunk episode, because it's all their fault. So, okay, you said you were actually organised enough to have picked some questions you wanted to answer. Let's start there.
Yes, so the big question I think we should answer is...
No, hang on, sorry to interrupt, but we've got to start with this one. From Daniel Kay, who says, what are the best reasons that Leeds is better than Manchester?
I'm going to throw some of the sweets at you.
I just think we need to talk about how Yorkshire is fundamentally... better than... I don't even believe this. I just kind of wanted to annoy you at the very beginning of the podcast.
I have three reasons why Leeds is better than Manchester.
Go on then.
Number one, its football team is awful, so you get that underdog glory.
Oh my God, you're actually thinking about this. I assumed it was going to be because it smells really badly and therefore makes you appreciate the smell of fresh air. It was going to be that kind of thing. But no,
I mean,
fresh
air is not going to be the metric I'm going to judge either of these cities on. But no, I mean, my first response was because the football team is bad enough you can feel like it's an underdog win. Actually, Leeds is not a terrible football team. I will say, and I think this is also true of Manchester, but I will praise Leeds for being a very good night out. I think any northerner who has been on a night out in Leeds will remember it as a very fun city to go out. And I gather from people who went to university there, it's a great place to go to university.
I went to speak at a student media conference in Leeds in May.
Did they take you out?
No, we didn't get out of the union, but I did have quite a good night in the union at the age of 36, which was in no way weird for anyone. But yeah, that was fun.
So. What I like about this moment is that John, for reference, has poured our cava not into wine glasses, but just into, like, not quite a half pint.
You know what this office is like. There are no wine glasses. But not only that, I was going to use, like, the plastic ones you get with the water machine, but they've stopped refilling those. Apparently, apparently we can't afford those
water
anymore. Yeah. Okay.
But genuinely, I think Leeds is a great city. I think it is a great party town. I think it's a fun town. I mean, obviously, it's not as good as Manchester.
I do actually prefer Manchester and also Liverpool. I mean, generally, I'm a big fan of the northwestern cities, and I find the Yorkshire ones a bit weird. But, you know,
it's a good one from James O'Malley. I'm just going to get you off this topic of Leeds and Manchester.
Okay, I really just wanted to wind you up. Start as we mean to go on.
Where should Crossrail 3 go?
Okay, I do have strong opinions about this.
I also do, but I'll let you go first.
Okay, I think the big problem you have in the London Rail Network, as it's currently constituted, is imbalance between North and South. Like, North London has relatively few overland lines that aren't connected to, like, the Tube or whatever. South London is absolutely covered with them. So the ideal would be a sort of South-to-South route. So what I would do is I would take something, you'd have the lines come into London Bridge, you drop into a tunnel, maybe a new station like Bermondsey Spa, London Bridge, under the River Blackfriars, maybe sort of down to Waterloo, I don't know, but then you kind of continue under the Waterloo lines to like Vauxhall and emerge somewhere like Battersea, and you connect up some of the southeastern and southwestern lines, free up space in those two London terminals for which you can run more long-distance services. And it's basically like RERC, which is a nice yellow one that runs along the Seine in Paris.
I actually think that is a very good idea, because I was going to say, similarly, in that South London is not particularly well connected within South London, I don't think.
No, it's, you have to go into town and out
again. You have to go into town and then out again. But actually the bigger question is, you know, making London Bridge bearable. So fine, I'll agree with you on that. Where would you put HS3?
I mean, the problem is we should clearly just be building the Cross North Link, right, which has had so many different names by now. It's been HS3, it's been Crossrail for the North, it's been
the Judas Line.
Why are we calling it the Judas Line?
Because it's a betrayal to link Manchester and Liverpool.
Okay. Didn't I think you'll find that ship sailed with the ship canal in... You're not going to give me the satisfaction? No? Okay. Okay.
I'm going to have some more of this delicious, incredibly acidic cava.
This was surprisingly expensive, this stuff, by the way. I don't even think I can expense this. This was like...
Surely you can expense this.
I mean, I might try. I might tune into a later episode and we'll see how... I can feel them... I can feel people tuning out in droves. It's like, I know they're self-indulgent, but this is ridiculous.
Join in next week for John's Can I Expense This episode? Okay. No, tell me where you think High Speed 3 should go.
I mean, I think High Speed 3 is a bit of a misnomer, because what you don't really need is high speed trains across the north necessarily. You just need good trains, and at the moment it only has terrible ones. So it's not like you need high speed in the way that the Eurostar or High Speed 2 are going to be high speed. You just need something that is of a reasonable quality of the sort that links like London and Oxford or London and Milton Keynes. And that's not really there at the moment. If you want to commute from like Liverpool to Manchester or Manchester to Leeds or whatever it is, it's a right pain in the arse and tends to involve the M62, right? So you just need a better train line.
Transport system.
And it's not necessarily, yeah. What's your answer?
Well, I was thinking, do we not need a high-speed line down into Cornwall?
Do we?
Well, I think at the very least we need a line into Cornwall that was not built by Isambard Kingdom Brunel. And that washes away every year. And why not make it high speed and upgrade Cornwall's broadband and try to do, oh my God, anything to offset the absolute disaster that Brexit is going to be.
We're not
going to
talk, this is a happy podcast.
Sorry.
We're not going to talk about Brexit.
Sorry.
I did, a couple of weeks ago, I was in Paris and I chaired, I was there to chair a thing at the We Share conference, which is a nice little French pun there for you, on climate change and how cities can adapt to it. And I did accidentally make... They wanted me to do a little introduction to the subject, and I did accidentally do a three-minute rant about Brexit instead. I'm weaning myself off the subject. The problem with doing high-speed rail to Cornwall is nobody bloody lives in Cornwall. Like, this, it's just... If you look at it from a cost-benefit analysis point of view, it's never going to get to the top of the list of priorities, just because once you get past Bristol, there is just no big towns.
Oh, no, that doesn't make sense. Well, maybe we should extend it into Scotland so that when climate change, your other favourite subject, bites, we can all flee to higher ground.
And on our holidays, yeah. Simon Alvey suggested, this isn't even a question, but he did suggest the Sue Jeffrey Memorial Hour.
I mean, we've not got an hour, and if we had an hour, I don't think we would dedicate it to that, but...
Are you not Team Sue? Like, this podcast is a safe space for fans of Sue Jeffrey, the Labour's failed Tees Valley mayoral candidate. We're the only people who, like... I don't even think she knows we do this. I think she would be stunned to learn that she has become a meme on a podcast.
Yeah. Okay, task for our listeners, if you ever run into Sue Jeffrey's, get her to comment on City Metro.
Yeah, we would, Sue, if you're out there, we'd love to hear from you.
Can we talk about towns that should be cities?
Okay, yes, that was an actual question.
So I feel there's one clear contender for this, and that is Reading.
Why Reading?
So Reading is one of the biggest towns that isn't a city in the UK. It's got a population of 232,000, and just for scale, Truro is 18,500, just over.
The slight pauses are because Stephanie has researched this and is reading the figures from her phone.
I'm sorry that I do research for our podcast. It's not a betrayal, John. It's just...
It's not the city metric values to actually go out and check this stuff before. But okay,
no, I actually have thoughts about this, because if you're one of our overseas listeners or you don't happen to know much about Reading, Reading is essentially a commuter town to London. In fact, I think it's one of the towns where the most people commute into London.
Yeah, because it's so big, right? Yeah.
Because it's so big. But it also has a good tech industry. A lot of IT companies are based there. It has a strong university with great robotics research. And it does have history. There are ruins. There are kind of things going on in the city centre. Every chain your heart could desire. And I think, crucially, people commute to Reading from neighbouring areas at quite a broad scale.
Yeah, like we talk about how the southeast of England is the rich bit, but actually it's kind of the south central England. It's like it's the M4 corridor on which Reading sits right in the middle. That is the richest part of the country because it's like connected to London and Heathrow and lots of lovely bits of countryside and Bristol and so on. And it's where like the tech industry is based, as you say. So Reading is a pretty big town, and the fact that it doesn't have city status and has been repeatedly denied it does kind of show quite how ridiculous the situation is.
On a related note, along a similar area of the UK, St Albans, not a city.
Yeah. I mean, you're preaching to the choir here, because I totally agree with you that official city status, which is granted by Parliament or the Queen, there's different ways of doing it, is complete nonsense. My absolute favourite is, I think St David's in Wales is the smallest official city, which is like 3,000 people. It's a village.
See, I was looking through this and I think there is something to be said for relative sizes of cities. So I'm more than happy to accept that Truro is definitely a city because within Cornwall it is the city. And ditto kind of places like Stirling, which are very small as UK cities go, because of where they're based in Scotland, I'm happy. Yeah. So I'm happy to make this relative case. That being said, St Albans is tiny, and it's also a commuter town, but more than that, it is basically a place you go for school trips. So again, if you're from overseas, St Albans has a martyr, St Alban, and it has a set of very well-preserved Roman ruins. And so basically, it is the place where if you are from anywhere near the south of England, or you go to school anywhere near the south of England, you will probably go on a St Albans school trip.
But Stephanie, aren't you from the north?
I went to school down south. Been down south a long time, John.
It's like, this is shocking new information to me. How did you, like, for all these years, I've just, you're from Manchester. Oh. What the hell's going on here?
So when I used to work here, we used to have this argument all the time, in that I would go, when we moved down south, when I was little, and people would ignore it, and then get cross when I reminded them of it. Anyway, been down south a long time, been on a lot of trips to St Albans. Very nice as a tourist destination, not a city.
Okay, I entirely agree with this. I think the official definition is really stupid. And so, like, yeah, as I say, when I wrote a piece explaining why I thought the official definition was stupid, so I could send it to people whenever they said things like, Reading isn't a city, actually, it's a town, on Twitter. Like, I wrote it just to shut those people up. The example I used was St David's, and I transposed a map of that onto Southend-on-Sea. St David's is about the size of the Southend-on-Sea shopping district. And, like, I'm not saying Southend is in any way important or notable or even worth visiting, to be honest.
People are going to write in about this.
I don't know. I spent a lot of time. It was my local seaside town as a kid, so I'm allowed to be mean about Southend.
I do like Southend.
It's like, well, it's kind of depressing. It's like the beach is really stony. And because you're still on the Thames estuary rather than actually the sea, what you can see across the water is some industrial estates in Kent. It's not a pretty place. It's...
Okay, but talking of non-pretty seaside towns, and I'm going to re-adopt my professional northerner guise, if you want to keep St Albans as a city...
I don't.
Okay, but if the rhetorical you wants to keep St Albans a city, you have to make Blackpool a city.
Blackpool's... I don't know, actually. I don't think... Like, so, okay, we play with the Centre for Cities data quite a lot because they're our friends.
John has had one glass of
coffee. Yeah, it was a big glass. But yeah, we're working on it. Yeah, so the Centre for Cities are our friends slash they give us money. And they have a list of cities which we write about, the data on these cities, and I don't think Blackpool's in there. And this is a fairly expansive list. Like, this list does include Reading. It also includes Slough.
I mean, John, I've got no...
We expelled Hastings. Hastings was in there, but it recently fell out.
I have no beef with the Centre for Cities. Hello to Rita and everyone at the Centre for Cities. Please keep sending me off.
Oh, there. Anthony, who I called out to last week, he's now listening to this podcast from the beginning, so we'll get to this in about 2020.
Well done for catching up when you get here, Anthony. But so my reasons are threefold. Firstly, again, it's one of the top 20 biggest towns in the UK, which I think puts it in the zone.
Yeah.
Secondly, it is also a tourist destination. People do go to Blackpool, and it has a rich history, particularly 20th century history, particularly between the wars. There's a lot going on there. But most importantly, I think you should be allowed to call your weekend in Blackburn a city break.
You said weekend in Blackburn.
Oh, fuck.
I'm gonna have to beep that out. I've never worked out what the beeping.
Are you beeping out the swearing, or are you beeping out the word Blackburn?
I'm just gonna leave the fuck in there. I think. Like, I don't think anyone's monitoring us to lose our universal rating. It's like this is all real, guys. This is city metric raw and unedited.
I love that you have a drink and you start slurring your technical terms, and I have a drink and start
mixing up your northern towns, cities, northern cities.
Blackburn is not a city.
Blackburn is on the list of Centre for Cities cities.
What? No, just for context, my partner's from Blackburn. Why?
Oh, no, he pretends to be from like a rural area now. He doesn't. Tell him he's not. He's a city boy now.
It's a city?
It's like,
is it?
Can we do this one, which I'm really excited
about?
Yeah,
go on.
Curtis Howard, 84, asked, is Redcliffe Maud good?
Sorry, but the way you pronounced that made it sound like he was Curtis Howard and he's aged 84.
I believe he's probably aged 32 or 33 and was born in 1984. But
good?
Maybe, is Redcliffe Maud good?
What is that?
Well, I'm very glad you asked, actually, Stephanie.
Oh, no.
I can't believe you fell for that. So Redcliffe Maud was the big government commission in 62, 63, I think, about reorganising British local government. English local government specifically, rather. And it proposed the system of, I think it was provinces was the top level. So we would have had provincial government. There would have been 7 or 8 English provinces. Then beneath that, there was a second layer, which I will tell you the name of in a minute because I'm currently Googling for it. And below that, there was a local one. So sometimes you still had unitaries. But they did all sorts of weird things. So like Redcliffe's more definition of Essex dropped parts of northern Essex to put them in with Suffolk and parts of western Essex to put them in with Hertfordshire, because it did all based on where the actual connections were rather than historic boundaries. Okay. So other things this report did were, so its version of Greater Manchester was bigger than the one we got, and it was called Selnick for South East Lancashire and North East Cheshire, which
That's
is a
so
terrible,
dystopian.
It's a terrible
it's
name.
Isn't it?
Yeah, but so it was like the original version of like, how do we reorganise English local government? And I actually think it's a great shame that this or something like this never happened, because it's quite radical, but it is at least rational. Like, some thought has been given to it as a system. So you have like strategic planning at the provincial level, then you do like local planning beneath it. And we just ended up with this weird patchwork where some areas you have county councils, but some areas it's all unitary authorities And people still argue about whether or not they're in like the metropolitan area. And it's like, no, don't get me wrong. It's given me a lot to write about over the last 3 years. But I think probably if we'd implemented Redcliffe Maud, then we would have stronger local government. We would be less dominated as a country by London, specifically Westminster. And I think we would probably have more investment in things like local public transport and maybe we wouldn't have a housing crisis. But, you know, you've got to remember, as I say this, that I'm now about two glasses in, so I'm probably just talking nonsense.
Tomorrow morning you're going to get the headline, you know, City Metrics John Ellidge says Redcliffe Maud would have saved us from the housing crisis. You should write that piece.
No, I mean, I will do, but there's a lot of effort. Like, but I will actually, like, basically the Liverpool one is the Liverpool city region that now has been created, plus I think West Lancashire, which is where, what's the name of that? Skemsdale. Good old Skemsdale. Where, yeah, so like, there's, I'm just amused by the word Skemsdale now. So let's.
You're going to make it sound weird for saying it too much.
Yeah, Skemsdale. I do think it's a great missed opportunity, and I kind of think sometimes it would be nice if there was that kind of Royal Commission that just said, right, this is what we're going to do with local government. I don't care where you think you live. Here, for governmental purposes, is where you actually live. And we didn't just have all these endless rows about whether or not, you know, Horton was in Liverpool or whatever it is.
I just, yes, but I think we don't care about what you think, where you think you live is disastrous.
Is it though?
Yes.
Is it really?
Local identity is so important. That's how we have so many great rows on this podcast.
I mean, it's important in terms of giving me something to write about, but I think in terms of like making government function. So like, you're talking to someone from Romford here. Like, did you see my story about Hexit?
No.
Okay, so the borough I grew up in, which is Havering, London's easternmost and most Essexy borough, is it Wednesday 26th of July, I believe? The UKIP contingent on the council is calling a council vote on declaring unilateral independence from Greater London.
I mean, that sounds quite funny. You're not behind it. John is just aggressively blinking.
What do you bloody expect?
I'm going to refill your drink.
Yeah, okay. But to give you a sense of what Havering is like politically, there are only...
Crap. God. Get the head off. Sorry.
We've just had a Carver escape there. I did tell you this was going to be entirely real. So there are only, of the 54 councillors on Havering Council, only two of them are Labour. And that's actually the sixth biggest group on the council after the Tories, UKIP and three different residents' associations. This is the kind of place it is. And like, they don't like, I don't know why, but these guys, the council as a whole, is not a big fan of Sadiq Khan. I don't know why that might be. Maybe they're not a big fan of his bus hopper policy.
Where you can
change buses without paying a second fare. They're
probably
very bothered about
that. I think
they have
a very reasonable principled objection to that based in patriotism.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's some kind of, maybe they dislike his housing policies. I don't know. There's just something about the guy they don't like. But they think, you know, Havering has never really bought into the London identity. It's much more like Essex. So it makes more sense for it to be a unitary authority in the County of Essex. And it's nonsense. Like, there is a tube line there. There's going to be Crossrail. It is part of the London housing market. You should be, like, planning what happens in Havering as part of... Stop smirking at me because I'm trying not to belch into the microphone.
I'm just finding it
stage.
So funny that if any of our listeners had ever thought, John's quite a cool guy. I wonder what it's like to go to the pub with him. The answer is he has, like, one drink and goes on long rants about
the problem with you, Stephanie. Do you want to know what the problem with you is? Do you really want
to
know?
Is it that I can drink?
Yeah, fuck. This is the problem. We're just swearing now. So I think there are two things. Like, okay, Havering is very Essex. Like, being from Essex is weirdly a part of my identity, even in the way that, like, I'm kind of...
Well, exactly.
I'm not
like point.
You would expect someone from
You're
Essex
not a
to be.
Londoner. But you're an Essex person.
Kind
you
of,
are.
Yeah.
That's true.
But, like, nonetheless, it still makes sense to treat Romford as part of London when you're, like, doing anything important for governmental purposes, because, sure, like, everyone there commutes into London.
Is Reading in London?
I don't think I've ever seen a definite... I mean, you clearly asked me that question because you'd just eaten a sweet and you therefore didn't want to have to talk for a bit because it's quite chewy. Reading is... I don't think I've ever seen the definition of London that goes out that far. The Eurostat definition of metropolitan London is the most expansive. That's like 13 or 14 million. and takes in, that it goes as far as Southend and Tunbridge Wells and covers much of Hertfordshire, for example. I don't think it quite makes it as far as Reading, but...
Okay. Do you remember that time you fell in a hole?
You're still, like, obviously space-filling. I'm still wearing the knee strap, by the way. Like, most of the time it's fine, but just occasionally there's a twinge, so I kind of wear it the odd day for support reasons.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's like, emotional support reasons.
You don't heal as fast when you get to my age.
Okay, I like Al_S, who I feel I should show you because his screen name is decorated with fire and
Al-Stora,
bike emojis.
Yeah, we quoted him before.
Al-Stora. Okay, he's got a great question. In that he's asked us to pitch a transit idea for a UK city that's more ill-conceived than the Dangle Way, and adds, but not, I don't know, buses made of ham. So I both have an ill-conceived scheme that is happening right now, and I have an actual idea that I think is good that I want to pitch, but I wonder if you've got any thoughts first.
Well, in the time it took you to ask that question, I picked up one of your sports mix and started eating it, so it's probably for the best that you did the talking for a bit.
No, I've still got the black ones, though. So I think we should talk about the Manchester Bike Hire Scheme.
Please do.
I don't know if anyone has been following this on Twitter. Helen Pidd, Northern editor of The Guardian, has been doing a lot on it. But Manchester introduced a bike hire scheme, and I think the best way to follow the progress of the scheme is to talk about Helen's tweets, which started with her writing this article about how great it would be and how it could be better than Boris bikes. And the heart of the scheme was that you could hire a bike anywhere. It would lock when you were done with it. And rather than be at docking stations, they'd just kind of be dotted about the city and you could go and unlock it with your phone.
So these are private companies which are very big in a lot of Asian cities, called O-Bike is the one I can remember the name of right now. But there's like three or four of them competing in a lot of cities like Shanghai. And they all work on this kind of app-based model where you pay via the app and then you unlock it with a code and then you lock it again afterwards, right? But the fundamental thing is the bike is on the street somewhere, not in the docking station.
Yep. And so when I heard about this, my immediate thought was, you know, I know Greater Manchester originates where I'm from. This is not going to work because a minority of Manx have an aspect of criminality, but the ones who do thieve are very good at thieving. And I felt that this perhaps slightly prejudicial statement bore truth when I heard...
Stephanie can be reached at Stephanie Boland at...
Not even my email address. But I felt that this slightly prejudicial statement, based mainly on my extended family, became brilliantly true. On my mum's side, Grandma, if you're listening to this, I don't mean you, kind of was justified, or I felt, you know, my views, I felt very edified to hear what I understand it's a story of somebody going to unlock a bike and following to where the bike is on the app and finding it was inside a man's front garden. And this guy kind of went, but I've taken it out. And she went, no, I've just done it on the app. And he went, no, I've taken it out, and wouldn't let her in the front garden. And so this is my kind of, you know, and it's now got to the stage where the op-eds have changed in tone from where this is going to be better than the Boris bikes.
You know, some of these are popping up in London now. And the criticism I've seen of a lot of them is actually a slightly different one, which is it just leads to piles of bikes being left everywhere.
I mean, that also does make sense, but I draw your attention to Helen Pidd's article in The Guardian. Manchester's bike share scheme isn't working because people don't know how to share.
Oh, that's so sad. But I wanted to push back against the idea of piles of bikes being a problem because no one seems to have a problem with the piles of cars left everywhere. Why are piles of cars fine?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do you hate cars, John?
I don't hate cars. I do. I own a car, despite living in
central
London.
You own a car?
Yeah, it's a 1999 Nissan Almera that used to belong to my great aunt-in-law.
That's a very Essex sentence.
It's a very literal little old lady car. It's like, it was such an obscure failed model that when we needed a new wing mirror for it, it was really, really difficult to track one down because they never sold like four of these things 20 years ago. We do have a car for when we require it, but we don't use it very often. I think generally speaking, actually giving up space to cars in London, and I'm a massive hypocrite here, is kind of bad.
Maybe you should sell your car and use a car hire scheme with an app.
Would you like to have that conversation with my wife for me?
No, I really respect and fear your wife. I would not do that.
Okay, then. I don't.
Well, if Sarah thinks it's a good idea, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, well, there we go. I don't think she's listened to the podcast recently. I think my father-in-law might. So, hi, Alan. How you doing?
Okay, can we talk about a transport idea that should happen, though? I think we should extend the Glasgow subway.
Okay.
I've actually stolen this theory off Dominic Hind, who said it to me in the pub last week. But Glasgow should be growing, and it does not have a good city public transport system. And his theory, which I'm inclined to believe, is that the council and various local authorities have refused to properly invest in the transport system and are thus scuppering Glasgow from becoming basically the techie modern hub that it should be becoming within Scotland.
But I've never been to Glasgow, it's the first thing to say. It is, I believe, the largest British city I've never set foot in.
Really?
It is, yeah, no, I keep meaning to, I haven't got around to it.
Well, maybe we should do a Skylines on tour and go to Glasgow because it is a fantastic city.
If anyone up there in Glasgow is listening and has, you know, some train tickets, we can definitely talk about that. But yeah, but my...
Why would they have train tickets from London to the city that they live in?
I don't know. People have things. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have. Why would I want a train ticket to Glasgow when they live in Glasgow? But okay, but like, my understanding was that Glasgow actually had quite a good rail network. Because it does have the subway, it does have the Clockwork Orange, which there is a debate about the number of lines there are on that, because Glaswegians would tell you there are two, and in fact there is obviously one that goes in two directions.
So it's an iconic subway, but is it a subway entirely fit for purpose?
But it also, I mean, it has a lot of commuter rail lines, right? It's not Leeds. We've already talked about Leeds.
Yeah, okay, it does have good commuter
rail lines. We haven't
talked
about Leeds. That was on the other podcast I recorded earlier before I started drinking the cava. I talked about how Leeds, in fact, has no public transport whatsoever.
Okay, you can go back and listen to that one on
Leeds. That one's actually going to come out later, so there's something to look forward to.
How's public transport in the so-called city of Blackburn? That's my question. It's not my question. Don't answer that. I don't care.
Well, it's funny you should ask, actually. I know nothing about public transport in Blackburn.
But okay, so... It has relatively good connections, and actually, only from my personal experience, I'm sure various Scots can write in and talk on this, I think the transport between Edinburgh and Glasgow is not bad either, in a way that, as we've said before, between Manchester and Liverpool is terrible.
Yeah. I mean, for those who don't know Scottish geography, Edinburgh and Glasgow are kind of at either end of what's known as the Central Belt, which is like where something like half the population of Scotland lived in the reasonably urbanised area right along the middle of the country. Between the Firth of Forth and the Firth of Clyde? Have I got that right?
I'm not sure.
Look at a map.
My main...
You're listening to this podcast, you like maps. Look at a bloody map. Don't expect us to spoon feed you of everything.
John is drunk.
I'm not drunk, exactly. I wouldn't say merry, because...
I'm on my 51st podcast, and I'm having a great time. The transport links actually from Edinburgh down into the borders have just been rapidly improved.
Oh yeah, they've just built a new line.
It's very, very good.
Well, they reopened a line actually, so like.
Yeah, it is. No, it's an old line that has reopened, but that's very good for the borders, which I think people think of as, you know, a Tory greyhound wielding posh boy's paradise, and actually that's only Selkirk. But
do you ever get a sort of romantic idea? Romantic in the sense of like poetry around 1800, not romantic as in, you know, dating. Do you ever get this romantic idea of like going to like some of the most rural and obscure bits of the country? I occasionally get this weird urge to go to like Western Wales or something where there's just nothing.
It's beautiful though. You'd really, really like it. And yes, and then I go.
I've never been to any. I've been to Cornwall many years ago, but I've never been to the extremes of the country. Like,
really?
I mean, I write about cities, Steph.
I think you would like lots of these places. I think you would really enjoy the Isle of Skye, and I think they would enjoy you.
I would like to spend... What does that mean?
I just think they'd find you quite a jovial, suitably witty and dour chap.
Okay.
But I have a lot of...
Am I dour? Is that what I am?
Yeah, you're reasonably dour. You're not perky.
I mean, no. No one would ever call me perky in any sense of the word. But, you know, I'd like to go to the west of Scotland. I've not done it.
Well, maybe you could do a tinier cities tour.
Yeah, I mean, again, the problem is just, like, if anyone wants to sponsor this, like, I'm getting gradually braver about the kind of spurious trips I will expense. But fundamentally, like, to do anything that's going to require actual sort of time or effort, I kind of need someone to...
If you're the mayor of a small city...
Why are you taking my booze away from me? Because you're giving me more of your booze.
Yeah,
okay, that's allowed.
Yours overflowed, and I feel bad.
Okay, a question from John Hannon, no relation.
Good.
Has a city ever really escaped its economic history? What would a realist growth strategy look like if we quit trying to remake places anew?
Oh, that's a very exciting two-part question.
It is.
I think you're probably better placed to answer the first part.
You say this, but I read this out because when I saw it earlier, I thought, well, that's a really good question. I've got a really good answer to it, and now I can't remember what it was. So I was really hoping you were going to dive in there.
I suppose it partially depends on the timescale we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing to say is it's actually, you can't really kill a city. Like, if you consider somewhere like Rome, which Rome was obviously the centre of the world 2,000 years ago, and then... It collapsed several times, but it never went completely.
Is this just because there's a kind of geographical reason why Rome rose to become the city of the world, and therefore it's always going to?
I mean,
revive
partly, but like you've got after 476.
But also, there definitely are dead cities because there's completely empty cities in, say, Russia, and you also will have places worldwide that have.
Russia has a falling population. That's quite weird.
That is quite weird.
Like, Russia has a major demographic crisis, which is a completely different one to...
Why is that?
I think it's all sorts of... I think the economy has not been great for a long time. I think there's a lot of people who have deliberately left for that reason. Also, like, we did... Very early on in City Metric, we did a lot of pieces with, based on data produced by one of our sister companies before we got into bed with the Centre for Cities. Hi, guys. We use data from Timetric, and one of the trends you can see in a lot of the stats on European cities is that cities in Eastern Europe have seen their population decline, and also the men die really young.
Okay.
Like, so they have a major gender imbalance, right? It's something like, you know, in the West, it's like 52-48 in favour of women, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in Eastern Europe, in a lot of these cities, it's more like 60-40. Because a lot of guys literally drink themselves to death by the age of 50. It's really upsetting.
Wow.
And I think Russia has that problem writ large. I think it's just, you know, it was a depressing place to be for many decades. So I think if people could get out, they did.
And didn't feel particularly like they wanted to have children. And
yeah, and it's a huge country. It's like, you know, it is literally the largest country on earth. So there's a lot of empty space there. You can just abandon a city and it's not going to cause problems. Like, Britain is small enough. If you abandoned the city, we would find another use for it pretty damn quick.
I really like this idea that somebody's written in and gone, talk about renewal in places that have managed to reinvent themselves. And we're like...
They're talking about post-Soviet Russia.
The Russian birth rate, that's a problem.
I actually think of the examples I go to of cities where they've not entirely escaped their economic history, but where I feel signs of hope. Actually, Manchester, I think, is a very good example. Like, Manchester it's a good place to be. There's an energy to it. It feels like it's bounced back from wherever. And I think you can see something very similar in, like, Cleveland, Ohio, which is quite similar to Manchester in that there's, like, a lot of university, there's a lot of big medical centres, got a young, vibrant population. So despite the fact that 10-15 years ago it was seen as quite a depressing place to be, it's now somewhere the hipsters are moving to.
And I think this will also happen if it's not already happening in Detroit, which I gather is also quite a cool place to go. It's got a very vibrant music scene.
There are
things happening there.
I went to Detroit on my tour last year. I think we talked about this. Yeah, and what really struck me about it is it has the most amazing architecture. Like, the downtown has all these amazing skyscrapers from, like, 1900, 1920, of the sort that, you know, you see in New York or Chicago and everyone kind of oohs and ahs over them. And you don't think of that in Detroit. You just think of, like, car building and Motown. And it's just absolutely stunning downtown architecture. And you could, they could make something of this place again, you know?
And I will say, because my dad doesn't listen to this podcast, and I hope everyone else can forgive me, I think Liverpool is like this as well.
I agree. No, I really... This is actually what I think is the big difference between the northwestern cities and the Yorkshire ones. I think Manchester and Liverpool just... They have the look and feel of big cities. In a way, Leeds, it just doesn't.
Well, just the centre of Liverpool, where they've regenerated kind of all the middle of the shopping streets. And you go out there now... I was up there, I was up in the Wirral in May. And if you go into the city centre, you now see, obviously, at huge cost, they've revamped the shopping streets. And there's now places to sit out, and there's bars spilling into the street, and there's restaurants, and there's people out there with their kids sat on the steps. And you go, this feels like a city where people want to be out and about and want to be doing stuff again. And that, I think, I know we kind of talk about municipal power versus soft power and identity and things like that, but I think there is a real value to city centres of just getting people on the street again.
Yeah.
And having people enjoy public space. I think it's one of the best things you can do in terms of bringing a bit of spirit back into your city centre.
It's street life. It's why I think cities that are too car-based often feel a bit dead. Because, so okay, a US city I've spent a lot of time in is Greater Miami. We've done the drive between the place we stay in, a suburb called Hollywood, which is, you know, not that Hollywood.
No,
obviously
no
different
relation.
Hollywood. Yeah. It's actually, I didn't realise until I'd been there a couple of times, it's named after the Los Angeles one. It actually came later.
Oh, God.
There's like 15, 20 miles up the coast. It's the most stunning drive, just driving down Ocean Drive and then Collins Avenue. And we always go to South Beach, which is, you know, South Beach is hell. It's this amazing Art Deco architecture, but we always end up at the same, like, two places because everywhere else is a bit, you know, spring break the whole time. And we thought one time, okay, why don't we try a different bit? We've looked past loads of interesting places in North Beach. Let's go to North Beach. And the problem is you do pass many interesting places. They're not in walking distance of each other.
Right.
And yeah. You don't realise this when you're driving. You can't park up somewhere and just kind of stumble along and find half a dozen different things that are interesting. You have to specifically decide on the destination.
I'm going
to
go there and then there and then. Yeah. And this is why my favourite places in the US are places where they're centred around a university. So in Miami, I feel the most friendly place to be as a Brit who's not got a car is Coral Gables. Because there's a big university there, slightly more walkable.
Yeah.
Apart from, obviously, there's a huge road cutting through town, which I once stayed in a roadside terrifying motel at. And similarly, Cambridge, Massachusetts, one of the most friendly, walkable places I've been in the States, because it's attached to Harvard and the universities there. So
this is one of those things that I find slightly counterintuitive, but I think is true, is that to a certain extent, dense cities are better. Cities,
okay,
where everyone is piled on top of each other, where it's like apartment blocks and you can walk between cafes and bars and your place of work. Or they're more... I was in Paris a couple of weeks ago. I said this already. I've already done the pun. I was in Paris a couple of weeks ago, and Paris is an amazing town for wandering around because you, even if you're in a boring bit, you walk two blocks.
And there's stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the problem with car-based cities is it's quite difficult to find the stuff.
See, I agree with this particularly at the moment, because last weekend I was in Zurich in Switzerland, which I think has, obviously, is very unlike Paris in a lot of ways, but is also a city you can really walk in. It's a tiny city, and it has a very good tram system. I tried to send you a photo of a book about trams, and I think you ignored me, possibly.
I don't think I got that, no.
I found
you
the
did
book...
the first time misspell it as teams and then made the joke about winding Connor up by looking at footballers, which I assume is a joke. Maybe you were going around, maybe you were literally going around Zurich perving on footballers. I don't know.
I might have been out for a while at that point. I don't remember this.
Never DM more drunk stuff.
Sorry. No, but it was, I found a book in Zurich called The Tram Generation about what impact the trams had on the city and wanted to bring it back for you, but I didn't buy it. Also, Swiss-German, which I presume you don't speak.
I don't, no.
But it's a very similar thing in that you can go out and there'll be a restaurant and there'll be a bar and the number of teenagers just out by the lakeside because it's very easy for them to get home afterwards. And again, it feels like a city alive. So yes, dense cities are good.
Yeah, and I feel that's something that London, modern London, does very well, since in the 90s people started moving back to the centre of town. It became aspirational to live in zones 1 and 2 again rather than the place you would get the hell out of as soon as you could. And I think central Manchester and central Liverpool have that. I think the challenge for a lot of the big regional cities is spreading that beyond the centre. Because so many of those cities, they have amazing city centres, and then you step outside them, it's the end of the world.
Although I think that's also the challenge for London in some ways is...
Okay, but our end of the world is a bit further out. It's like zone 4. It's like, oh, great, Streatham. You know, it's like...
Yeah, sure. But I think there is a challenge, especially as London continues to grow, in that if my commute on a bad day can be an hour, I am not then going out when I get home, because by the time I get off that bus, I just want to be at home. And so the question needs to be, how do you create enough stuff in my area of London? And lots of boroughs of London have responded very well to this. And you, for me, the test is always, can you pass a whole weekend without going into the city centre? And I'm sure this is a kind of thing worldwide for people in commuter belts, is when it gets to the weekend to do stuff, do you want to go into town or can you just hang around where you live? And I think how different parts of London respond to that over the next 5 years will be really key to where becomes worth it.
I can do that because I live in Islington, I'm that kind of ponce. But like, I'm aware there are other places quite close to the centre of London. You
wouldn't want to do that. Yeah. We have a question from Joe Farnworth Mayers, who asks, why are...
Can I just say, we've been going quite a while. It takes longer to drink a bottle than I thought it would. We've been going 45 minutes. We should be wrapping up. But it's like...
I will say the bottle is now empty. We only have stuff left in glasses.
I'm done.
Yeah. You're done.
I'm doing another...
I've been talking too much.
Have a sweet.
Anyway, Joe Farnworth Mayers asks, why are coastal towns and cities so shit other than Brighton? And what this did is it started an argument in the comments about whether, as Thomas Clark says, Whitley Bay makes your New Age collective look like a quarry with some hills attached. Whitley Bay is just outside Newcastle. Anyway, this ended
into... It's where our friends in the north fit. Where the characters in that will come from.
And is it
at some point I want to do a podcast about our friends in the north, largely as an excuse for rewatching our friends in the north, which is amazing.
I feel like there's something else filmed in Whitney Bay. Anyway, it very, very quickly descended into Caps Lock shouting, and then I don't see Labour conference going to Whitley Bay, so I think I win. I mean, that's a whole other question, but are coastal towns and cities shit?
I think there is a structural problem where they used to be resort towns, and now they're not, because cheap flights are a thing, and why would you go to Blackpool if you can go to... the Mediterranean.
Because the tower has a glass floor.
You're not really selling it.
I am selling it. You have no taste. Guys, you stand in the tower, you look down, the floor is glass.
Oh good, I can see my imminent death.
Yeah,
why would you...
it's great. John, you love an existential crisis. You'd adore Blackpool.
But like, I can get an existential crisis if I go... Oh, actually, this is the one of the worst... Honestly, this really shook me. This is one of the most...
Did you stand up too fast?
Fuck you. I like this new swearing thing we're doing. Shaken I've ever been... Shut up. We need to stop this soon. We're going to go to the pub in a minute. It's fine. When I got on the wrong branch of the London Overground, I was trying to get to Peckham, and I got on the Crystal Palace branch, and I was so freaked out, and I realised I'd got on the wrong train.
But that's the branch that goes to my flight. You should have come by.
This was like a year and a half ago, so...
I didn't live there then. If it happens again, you should come around.
Also, in my experience of turning up to people's flats unannounced, it doesn't always go well.
Well, you can DM me, and then we'll let you in, and we'll make you a cup of tea.
Can we stop this and go to the pub yet?
No, I want to hear you talk about coastal towns and cities and how shaken you are when you get on the wrong branch of the
I think there is an economic problem in that a lot of them are in the same way a lot of northern industrial towns. They had a purpose that is not there anymore because the industry has moved on. It's not really any different if your industry is tourism. So, like, Brighton has found a different purpose because it's now kind of, you know...
Artsy green people, homies club.
Yeah, it's like a sort of London enclave.
Mm-hmm.
And Bournemouth also kind of in the, like, Bournemouth is actually big enough.
Bournemouth has really retained its status as a tourist destination as well.
I mean, Bournemouth has a microclimate, which is kind of weird. You do get quite good weather down there in a way you don't in much of the country. But also, like, Bournemouth is like, it's like 250,000 people again. It's like a fair sized place that can kind of survive on its own. It's not just a resort town. Whereas a lot of the places that are only there as seaside towns for day trips from London or Manchester or whatever, those day trips don't happen anymore.
See, I really, really like Whitley Bay. And actually, last time I was in Whitley Bay, there are really nice pubs and bars and cafes there. So it kind of makes me wonder what our definition is of a successful city and town in that. Is scaling up and robust infrastructure and all of that always the goal?
I think there's probably also a definitional problem that if you go to one of these places and there's the wrong weather that day, you will come away with a completely different idea of it than if you go and it's glorious sunshine.
I don't know, I've never been to the coast around Newcastle when it's not been awful howling rain, if not snow, and I do still quite like
it. Do you like the Smiths?
What's that got to do with anything?
I don't know. I was just going to say, like, you probably quite like it when it's raining and you're pretending to be from Manchester. My mind went to the Smiths.
I do like the Smiths. Should we go to the pub?
Yeah, let's go to the pub.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.